the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Welcome in to another edition of Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. How are you, Mr. Patrick?
I am doing great, man. I've been real busy taking care of business. Deep South is growing and doing good things. And just been taking care of my mom, taking care of my son. I was telling you a few minutes ago, I went to the gym with my son today, and we got this little class thing that we do. He's got the way he loves doing it, and it changes up our normal routine of cardio, and he gets to have interaction with different people because everybody loves Nick at the gym. Every time any gym I take Nick to, he's very selective. When you know, if we've got a membership at a gym, well, that's the only gym he's going to go to. You know, he's going to go outside the box. You know, it's an autism thing, you know.
Yeah, he likes the routine.
I got another funny autism story for you. I fell out of sleep last night, you know, and I'm watching Mom and Nick. And it got late, and I trained hard with Nick yesterday, too. And I was trying to get Mom to go to bed, and so she was fussing, and she was in that argumentative type mood that sometimes people with dementia get. So she goes, and she says she goes on to bed, so she's in there, and I go on to bed, and when I fall asleep, when I first lay down for about 2 hours, I'm like out so cold where a friggin' tornado could come in, and you know, and I'll sleep through it. But after that 2 hours, I wake up, and after that, man, I can hear everything, and I'm up and down, you know, for about every hour or so. But anyway, evidently last night, Mom fell down, and she's got this little cabinet that's full of old CDs, you know, and evidently she grabbed it on her way down. And a bunch of them fell on her, right? And so Nick said today, he says, "Hey, Dad." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Man, he took a bump last night." I said, "Oh, really?" He says, "Yep." He goes, "The CDs fell on Nanny." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yep." He goes, "Nanny was cry." I said, "Really?" Now I'm like, oh, my God.
You're worried,
you know?
Now.
So I'm not going to have to check her. But I knew she was okay because she was up making her bed and stuff. But she wasn't selling anything, you know.
Right.
So I looked at him and I said, "Nick," I said, "what did you do? Did you go help her?" He went, "No, I was in bed." It's bedtime. I was in bed. I'm sorry she fell, but it's bedtime.
Past bedtime. That's what we
Yeah,
did.
Man.
Was she okay?
Yeah, she's okay, man. I checked her out. She didn't really have a bruise. I think she just kind of fell up against the bed and grabbed the case as she was falling. And I think she just knocked a bunch of them out. I don't think it was a big bump, you know, because even if I'm in a coma, I've got to where, because I've been watching, you know, her and my dad. It's been about 2 years since I've been over there checking, you know, keeping an eye on folks. And I've got to where, you know, I listened pretty good through the night of something going on. It wasn't a problem with Pop. But, you know, Pop was where he was going to be. You know, I just had to make sure he didn't roll off the bed and be yelling for me laying on the floor. But Nanny sometimes, she'd get up and go wandering through the house. I had to hide keys and stuff, make sure she don't come by the pool. Just go wandering down, check the mail at 3 a.m. I woke up the other day and I saw a light in the hallway, and I went down there, and she's sitting in her bed like it's up. That's like 4 a.m, and she's got papers just surrounded. I don't know where these papers come from. Now, she evidently got some stuff stashed in her room, man. But it looked like she was doing taxes. She had so many papers.
All kind of stuff.
And I said, "Nanny, what are you doing?" And I think she must have been doing this in her sleep or either that or dementia. She looked at me and she goes, "I don't know." Okay, well, why don't we put those papers up and let's go back to sleep? You know,
and did she go back to sleep?
Put them up and right back to sleep, man.
Wow.
Sometimes it's that easy. Sometimes it's not that easy.
How old
anyway,
is she?
I'm sorry about rambling, man. Let's talk about some wrestling.
No, this is what's about our life. How old is she?
She's 85.
Oh, 85. Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. First, we're going to start with some sports because somebody's got a sports question, and me and you are Braves fans, and they got eliminated from the baseball playoffs by the dadgum Phillies, which I'm pissed off about.
Of all people.
Yeah, exactly. Dylan Lehigh says, "Nick, who's your favorite Phillies player this year?"
That's hard to say, man. There's a guy, because I'm terrible with names, but there was a kid that's been hitting a bunch of home runs for him. It's got his little boy there all the time. That
they got Nick Castellanos, and they got Bryce Harper.
Castellanos. He's the one that's got the little kid that's been showing, that's yeah, been at the games, popping for his dad's home runs. He's the one that's like hit two or three in a game.
Crushed the Braves. He crushed
Braves. I, you know, after watching them, just because of the story of him being able to have such an amazing run like he's doing, you know, and his little boy to be right there to be a part of it. That's, you know, that's the only good part I can think about. Because I really don't like the Phillies at all. And Michael Hayes, he's a good friend of mine, and he's, you know, he's got connections with the Phillies. Whenever they would come to town, he hooked me up, and we'd have really good seats, you know, where the Phillies families and stuff would sit. And, but it was just, man,
I hate
but
the Phillies.
Michael was good though. Michael, before seventh inning stretch, Michael was, yeah, he was downtown then. He was taking, he checked out the ball game, poof, and he was off to the clubs, you know. So, yeah, but it was cool. Nick, me and Nick had a good time going to a bunch of them. So,
are you the type of guy, like, will you root for the Phillies since they beat the Braves or anything?
No,
but
I will
Phillies?
Not, you know, yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because when I saw those fans start mocking us about the chop and chanting us, and I was like, okay. I mean, y'all come up with your own gimmick. I don't mind you rubbing our nose in and you beating us, but don't, you know, don't mock us. Come up with something original. But that's Philly, man. Those are their heels. Philadelphia are heels, man. Yeah, they're heel fans. If you're a baby face, you might as well go up there and accept the fact that you're going to get booed and just love it, because most people want to be a heel anyway, you know. So there's your chance.
Yeah,
go up there and be a baby face and watch how you get booed in Philadelphia, man.
Yeah, everybody's a baby face when they visit Philadelphia.
Yeah,
they are the standing heels, my friend.
Yeah, boy, that's it.
I know the Eagles fans are rowdy. I don't hate them as much as the Phillies, though. I just hate the Phillies.
Yeah, I think Bryce Harper's got a lot to do with it, too.
The Eagles, the football team, I'm all right, but.
Yeah, I think Bryce Harper's got a lot to do with it, too. Yeah. He just kind of carries heat with him everywhere he goes.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Now, everybody hated Washington when he was in Washington, and they hate the Phillies. You know, he's a heat magnet for everybody except for the team he's on. Because
I was about to say, if he came
over
the
Hall
of
Famer,
he'd be a favorite player, probably. But
yeah, he'll be a Hall of Famer one day. You know what? And as much as I think about it now, as much of a heel fan as I am, I might start liking him a little bit better, because he's got major heat everywhere except in Philly.
And I think
sometimes they're pissed off at him too. So
and he don't care either. He don't.
Yeah, he may have to
like
be my guy just for the simple fact that he's such a great heel and he's got heat everywhere.
There you go. Bobby KF5GTX, he hit us up and he says, Nick, what did you think when Vince bought the Georgia Championship Wrestling time slot in 1984?
I was really shocked, because back then, you know, there were still territories, and you thought of where you worked as being big and strong and invincible, and you didn't think that somebody could be able to just come right in and sweep something like that out from under them, you know. Yeah. You know, something that was that important. And
WCW is so embedded too.
Yeah, it was a shock, you know, and because I was there for Black Saturday, and I was there also at Panama City when Vince bought WCW. I was one of the few people that was at both events, and they were both really similar. You know, people were offered jobs if they wanted to come and work for them, and you know, and but that was the deal, man, especially the first time around. You know, I was loyal to the people that I was working with first time around at Black Saturday, because I was wanting to start wrestling, you know, and I had a good spot, and I was, you know, we were traveling, and I was making money, and I was being able to work from home, and all of a sudden this guy from New York shows up, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, my company's still running. They just have had to start recording out of Macon and using all of our local TVs that we had. And because we had local TVs up and we were still doing those Ohio tours too, you know. So, you know, they had to try to rely on those at that point in time, you know, which wasn't going to last for long, because that superstation was the stronghold there. But I didn't want to make a move, man. I was happy. I was at home, and I did not want to. I grew up in the South, and I didn't, you know, and I'm not knocking New York, because it's an awesome place to visit. It's really awesome to visit. You can go and have a blast. But man, It's just, I grew up in the burbs in the South, man. I living in the city, in any major city, would be really hard for me, but especially up in New York City, because it would just be, it was away from everything, away from all my family, you know, my mom and my dad and my wife and my kids. And it's like, wow, what are we going to do? We're going to sell this and then move, you know, what's the deal, you know? But so I just stayed loyal with the people that I was with, you know, when that, the first time it happened. But as, and an answer to your question, I was truly shocked that, and thought to myself, how in the hell, from a business sense, could they let that happen? Even though I was young and dumb and green and more about raising hell, and you know, I had that much business sense. What the hell were they doing? How could they drop that ball? You know?
Yeah, because Georgia Championship Wrestling was embedded, man. That was,
oh man,
crazy.
Yeah, you held onto that ball with both hands. I mean, that was just crazy, you know. But to answer your question, I was kind of in shock, and you know, and then you know, in wrestling, you're your own agent. You know, you don't have agents working for you. So the next thing you think is, okay, well, now jobs. You know, and do I stay with these people or do I try this? You know, I really don't want to move to New York, you know, at all. And well, my people are saying this, and my people ended up being full of it down the road too. You know, because they ended up selling off to Crockett, and it was funny, man. Every time a major wrestling company that I have worked for has sold out or sold to somebody, like when Ole and them and Barnett had left already, but they sold to Crockett, and when WCW got sold out the very night before. They get there and say, hey, there's a lot of rumors out there, and I just want to make you guys just comfortable with knowing that those are all rumors. It's all bullshit. We're not selling. We're not blah, 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 blah. And then the very next morning,
24 hours later.
Oh, hell yeah. They get there, and there they are, the new owners, man. It's like, I guess they just wanted us to show up with happy faces. And
yeah.
I don't know what the psychology behind it was, but they sure bullshitted us both times.
84, were you, who were you working with the most? Were you Continental then?
84, when that was when I transferred. I left WCW and Crockett bought it, and I did some independent in Atlanta. I worked for Ann Gunkel, Gunkel Enterprises, just for a couple of months. And then I went to Pensacola. I worked there for about 6 or 8 months, and I went from there to Mid-South or Watts out in Louisiana. And I worked there until
so you got injured?
Yeah, until I got hurt 2 weeks before Christmas in 85. So 84 and 85, I was getting in the tail end of 83, I was getting good ring time, man, experience. And it was the tail end of territories at the time, and none of us knew it, you know. But, good time. It was a great, great, great time in the business. Great learning experience too, man.
Mark Lindsay hit us up and said, Nick, I'm a radio guy in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mark's
a good friend. He's been to a bunch of top guy meetings. He says, any fun stories or any memories from any time working in Birmingham?
Oh, working in Birmingham. I love working in Birmingham.
I bet you hit Birmingham a lot. That was a hot stop back in the day.
Yeah, I used to love the old Boutwell Auditorium, man.
Yeah, they had Continental.
That was fun. I mean, the new arena was really nice, and you know, and everybody has to change with the times, but that old Boutwell Arena was awesome, man. I worked there as a referee for Major Cup. I got to wrestle there in Continental, and it was awesome, man. I loved the old Boutwell. But as far as any old funny stories, I didn't really, you know, have any funny stories so much as, you know, because I was young and green and wanting to learn, you know. You're gung-ho about that, you know, pretty much, you know. But that, even though you're gung-ho down there, that was really a laid-back atmosphere down in the Continental. You know, you could take a deep breath, you know, and but you still had to work hard. But it was great because there were so many name guys that passed through there, because you could go there and the trips were fairly short. And you wasn't going to make like Georgia Championship Wrestling or money or Crockett's money or even maybe Tampa money or even Watts money. But your trips were short and you was going to make good money. And you could be, if you wanted to, you'd be out on the beach like 4 days a week, you know, for, and it was, and it had good
nice.
Gyms, and the, you know, it was a great place to go and work and learn, man. It was really cool.
Did you have a traveling partner in Continental?
I traveled with the Armstrongs a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Armstrong brothers, Scott and Steve, a lot, because I teamed with them. I took Johnny Rich's place. Johnny, they had a little tag team called the Rat Patrol, and Johnny Rich was part of it. And they were there was at some party, and Johnny was with Tommy, and Tommy got a beef with somebody, and Johnny had his back, you know, because Tommy was in, I guess, was start, people starting to come surround him, and during the waylay, Johnny got stabbed like 3 or 4 times, you know, he was out, and he's lucky he survived. You know, they got him to the hospital.
Wow.
And Johnny got cut up pretty good. And so they was like, ooh, they just, you know, they were just starting. It was like they were underneath baby faces, and they had a little gimmick, you know, because, you know, to try and spice the card up all the way through, they felt like they had little cut junior heavyweight titles and stuff like that, you know, to make the underneath, you know. So we were like good little underneath babyface gimmick, and now they were short a guy. And Pop knew that I was looking for a place because I just had left. I didn't want to go to the Crockett deal because I had just started wrestling. And I had to go in as a ref there, and I thought that was stepping backwards, and I was wanting to move forward. And so Pop threw my name out there, and they said, you know, Nick's home just doing some indies, you know, in Atlanta. He can be here next week if you need him. And they said, call him. And boom. And I went in my room with Pop, and you know, he had a little condo down there in Gulf Breeze.
Oh, nice.
Go down and fish on the pier, and hit the Pensacola Beach, and close to the gyms. And the Armstrongs lived right down there too, man. I'd go hang out with them. And Bullet Bob at his house, and they didn't really need to go to the gym unless they just wanted to, because Bullet had everything in his garage, gym-wise, man. That's when I first met Road Dogg. I told this story on a podcast. I went over there, and I was wrestling in 84, man, and I went over to work out with Scott and Steve, and they opened up the garage doors, and we're lifting an iron, using all Bob's stuff, man. He had everything in there. And all of a sudden, we hear the lawnmower crank up. And all of a sudden, there's this little kid pushing the lawnmower, looking at us, and Brian's jogging next to him with a little sweatband around his head and throwing like shadow box punching, you know, and his buddy's pushing the lawnmower through the grass and wanting to check the brothers out, you know. So Brian kind of reminded me of the old Tom Sawyer story, you know, the paint the fence deal, you know. He'd say, hey, man, you can come cut my grass. My brothers are working out. But, oh, yeah, I'll be right there. He'd just mess around. It was so. That's the first time I met him, man. I should have known about him right then.
You speaking of Bowell, didn't you? You tagged with Scott a bunch of times there, didn't y'all have a feud with the Nightmares?
Yeah, we worked with the Nightmares a lot, and
who was the Nightmares?
It was Kenny Wayne and Danny Davis. I'm sorry.
Oh, Danny Davis. Yeah.
Yeah, Danny. Yeah, that running the OBW thing for a while, I think.
Yeah.
Danny. Yeah, Danny was great. Both of them were great. They had great timing, and they were just so loose. And I was used to working with guys that were stiffer in Georgia. I had to learn to loosen up a little bit, and working especially with Kenny and Danny, because they were just like, man, it was just smooth, man. You get any young babyface that had a chance to work and get a run with those guys, you got a good lesson in timing and smooth and psychology and the beginning of changing from old school lay there and get a hold to new school, more action, boom, 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 you know, but still yet tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, and they were really good at doing that, both of them.
All right, Richie the Hill said, Nick, when Eddie, Dean, and Chris were leaving WCW, Chris handed you the big gold. What was the conversation about them wanting to be released like?
We didn't really have a conversation about them wanting to be released. It wasn't something that they discussed with me. You know, that was amongst themselves. You know, if they recorded a scene of him handing me the title because they wanted to leave, then that was like a pre-recorded thing. It wasn't like, you know, something that was captured randomly. But they made the right move. You know, they were not being pushed to the extent that they could or should have been pushed, and they weren't being put into particular light. It was like at that point in time, WCW seemed like they had a really hard time learning how to get new talent over. They were good at using other people that were already over somewhere else or already had an established name from the territory days. But as far as creating new people and new characters and new, they just hadn't figured that part out yet, you know? And there was a ton of guys that had incredible talent that slipped right through their fingers. Well, they didn't slip through their fingers. They just let them go or fired them, you know? And they'd go to WWF at the time before they got the F out, and then go up there and be huge, become huge stars, because they did know how to get new people over. And you listen to how the system that they had, it was kind of funny, you know, because you hear like Stone Cold and them, and have them having like 3 pages of names and gimmicks, you know, like, you know, they had a funny system. But if Vince saw something in some, oh, I'm sorry, man.
That's all right.
Let me turn this off completely. Oh, man.
You're right.
It's my business partner, man, and my booker, man. I'm hoping it's not an emergency, but you just have to catch it later, man. Let me turn this off. You know what's funny? That reminds me of a funny story, too. You know, JBL doing the Fox News thing for a long time.
Yeah.
And Sheldon Benjamin one time saw him on there, and he thought it was pre-recorded. He goes, "Oh, hell." And he called John. And all of a sudden, John's phone starts ringing on Fox News while he was live on the air. And it was Sheldon. And Sheldon realized, oh, shit.
He hung up.
That's
great.
Okay. I'm powered down now, folks. I'm sorry. They'll probably edit this out unless you get a good laugh out of it. yeah. Hey, if it would have been an emergency, we'd have cut in there. But yeah, it wasn't. We're good.
Brad Stanton wants to know, Nick, what was the most exhausting gimmick match for a referee? My guess is last man standing, he says.
Now, there's a lot of counting in that. That would pretty much be, you know, especially with guys that are working, and because it pretty much goes all over the place, and there's a lot of finishes, false finishes, up and down and stuff. There's some matches that are a breeze to do. You know, but that is one that you definitely work harder. I'll be honest with you, straight up high paced technical matches are about the hardest to work, because you have to be timing wise there for everything they do. You know, right. A good high paced technical match that has, you know, not just ground attack, but spots, you know, the Shawn Michaels, you know, those are the ones that you got to work the hardest when you got two guys that set a good pace, but
out of their way.
Yeah. And that just could just be, yeah, that could just be a regular straight match. It just depends on the two guys and you know, their gimmick and their intensity level. You know, anytime you got in the ring with Chris Benoit and somebody, you was going to work. Everybody in the ring was going to work, you know. Undertaker, everybody in the ring is going to work. As a referee, you're really going to work because you got to run from him. Boom, you know, and then get his spots and read his body language when he wants you to come back in, when he wants you not to, you know, listen, you got to, you know, think and be tight. You're going to be part of what's the flow, you know, and that is fun though. You know, that's not exhausting. That's fun. When you get into something like that, that's, you know, what we do this for. But to me, just a straight high-paced technical match with guys that do spots, those are the hardest ones, because you're in there working, man, and your timing is, you got to be there for everything count wise, you know. And to me, that's when you work the hardest.
Did you do how many 30, 60 minute matches did you do?
Oh, there's no telling, man.
A bunch of 60 minutes?
Oh, I've done 60. I've did a 90 before.
A 90.
Yeah, well, hell, I did every match on the NWO pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, that was true.
But as far as individual matches, I've done a bunch of, you know, back in the day, every time in Georgia Championship Wrestling, every time Flair come to town or Harley come to town, they would do an hour Broadway with somebody. We call them Broadways when they go 60 minutes through. You know, they was doing it with, you know, either Tommy Rich or somebody. And Tommy, did a lot of them with Tommy, and Tommy and Harley and Tommy and Flair, because Tommy was the big babyface at that time, Georgia Championship Wrestling. And
are those tiresome, or is it a slower pace? So it's kind of, you got time to kind of catch your breath and pay attention? Or
it's different pacing. You have to start it off. You can't just start off at a snail's pace.
Right.
But you got to capture their attention. But you have more time to do the things. You're not jamming things into a little small bag. You know what I mean?
But
you
as take a ref, your time. How is
you
it?
Interact with the people. You take your time to do spots. You sell. And there has to be – you can't just do the standard shine, heat, come back home. You know, you have to have hope spots and a couple of heats, you know, a mini comeback. This is going to be it. Oh, and take it away from them. You know, maybe even do that a couple times. You know, Flair was a master at it. Harley was a master at it. Those were the two that really stand out as far as doing 60 minute time limits or even longer. You know,
is that taxing for you as a ref, or is that,
it's tiring. You work hard, you sweat, but you're so into it that you're just, it's such an awesome feeling, man.
Right.
And when you're out there going an hour with guys of that caliber, nine times out of 10, you're in front of a sold out crowd that's going freaking nuts, you know, and your adrenaline flow is going so much that, yeah, you get tired, you get winded, you get thirsty, you know, you're like, damn, I wish I had a ref bump in here where I could roll out and get a drink of water, but these guys are working harder than I am, so I've got to suck it up and go, you know? So, they were hard to do, but they were so fun that at the end of the day, you thought back on it, and it was like, hell yeah, it was like an accomplishment. It was an achievement, right. You know?
Yeah.
Especially at the end of it, when they buy the story, the hour long story out of just one man, it's hard to do now. The business has changed so much. They're so used to seeing flash here, flash there, bam, 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 you know, to just settle down and you know, there's people that do it though. You know, there's a lot of matches that give extra time, especially on WrestleMania pay-per-view. Some of them kids are getting 30, 40 minutes. You know, that's very close to an hour. You know, there's a lot of folks that can do that hour and can tote the mail, you know, Undertaker, you know, but JBL, you know, about just those older guys. I'm younger guys now, you know, just can do the same.
Yep.
But that's you have to be mentally focused and just be into the flow. And at the end of the day, man, doing an hour is cool. It's like you climb the hill, climb the big mountain, you know.
All right. Alex Pyrus Redondo said, Nick, any funny stories or memories on the Boogeyman?
The Boogeyman, he worked a lot with my dad. I don't really have any funny stories with him because I wasn't around him a whole lot, man. He was, he was like, oh, boogie on TV, but he's just really cool, quiet, and mellow kind of guy, you know, in person. And he did a lot of stuff with my dad in the Carolinas, a little bit in Florida. And he came through Georgia Championship Wrestling. And I lived on the south side of the airport. You know, but you in Alabama, you know, the Atlanta airport. Yeah. So I lived down there close. And I had a little apartment down there. I was young. You know, I hadn't had kids or anything yet. And he came to town to do a Georgia show. So I went and picked him up at the airport. Took him to my apartment and brought him, and he was just real calm and real mellow, man. It just and there wasn't really any funny story to it, you know. He just, oh, thank you, brother, thank you, you know. That's you know, then when that camera was on, in person, he's a lot more mellow. At least he was around me, you know. And that's my take on him.
All right. Adam Arthur Krasnov has a couple of questions for us. He says, Nick, was it uncomfortable working in the ring with the referee camera at Halloween Havoc 91?
It sucked bad. It sucked bad. I felt this technology now is way different, you know, but back then, first off, it was hard to work because it had a damn big ass battery pack. And they wanted me to like try to tape it to my lower back. And I'm like, okay, how in the hell am I supposed to take a bump? And because I think they wanted me to take a bump in one in the match. Yeah. And I'm like, well, you know, I can't take a bump with it. And it, you know, it was really uncomfortable. And if unless I was completely still, unless I got in close and got completely still, didn't move, and the guys weren't moving, because when the guys move, the ring bounces like this. Then this is what this is the shot you're getting right here. You know? And so they scrapped it fairly early, thank goodness, because you know, they saw, you know, the technology just wasn't there. The ref is carrying around this big ass heavy ass battery pack, and they gotta find a place, you know, where he can comfortably wear it and to be able to do his job still, if he has to take a bump or something. And I don't think they got enough good shots, because I even got in close a few times and tried to hold still. But three guys holding completely still in a wrestling ring in front of a sold-out crowd, you can get that boring chant going really, really friggin' easy, you know? Yeah, I'm glad they scrapped that, because it was uncomfortable to wear and it looked stupid. I looked like a giant human Q-tip wearing the damn thing. and it didn't really get that great of shots. It was a great concept, you know, a great idea, but in application, trying it just didn't work. You know, there's too much play in the ring and me constantly moving, and didn't really get enough good shots out of it to warrant, you know, adding it to the mix. Thank goodness.
You know, that's over 30 years ago now. It's crazy. It hadn't been tried with all the technology we got, and maybe they are trying it. They just can't nail it down, but I wouldn't be surprised if that ever popped back up. Somebody's going to try it again, I think.
Yeah. There's different ways they could do it. Hell, they could mount a little bitty one on a ball cap like this, you know, and it'd be easy instead of having
glasses,
friggin' Q-tip and the 20-pound battery pack thing, you know, like, man, that's like having a damn car battery in your pants trying to work like a match.
Maybe a body cam, like a police officer.
Yeah.
Something. They got to try. I bet something will come back up. It's
GoPro will come up with something.
Yeah,
like
the
that,
technology's, you know, getting there too great. There's something there, I think. Adam also says, Nick, Barry Windham once said, at PN News, got caught stealing from the boys. Do you recall any incidents?
I remember that time, and I always liked Paul. Paul News is his name. I never saw him ever steal anything, to be honest with you. And I don't know what, if there was politics behind that, or if it really happened, or if he did, or if he didn't. I never had anything ever come up missing, and I never had a problem with him. He was always a super nice guy. And if he did do it, then shame on him. You know, you don't do that to your brothers. You don't do that to anybody. What the hell? Right. It's just a thief, man. Guys are making money in the wrestling business. They just steal, unless you've got some kind of – guys that are stealing in the business got some kind of problem, you know, your chemical problem or something. Something ain't right, you know. Yeah. But I didn't see that in him, you know. And I was really kind of shocked when all that happened. But I liked a couple of the guys that blew up the most. But like I said, I don't know if it was there was politics behind it or what. But I was around, and I do remember that. And I'll be honest with you, I hate that people even still talk about it, you know, because it's been so long now. And even if he did do it, hopefully he learned his lesson, you know. And if he didn't do it, wouldn't that really suck that all these years later that people still think that, you know? To me, unless I'm 100% sure, I'm not gonna throw that out there. And I can't because I'm not 100% sure.
And, but you remember at the time they were talking about it, you just didn't.
Oh, I remember. I was
see
there.
It or see
I remember
proof
him
or
having
every...
beef in the locker room with a couple of guys. Yeah. You know, especially one guy in particular was really on his grill. A guy that he wouldn't have been able to handle either. But I didn't know. You know, I didn't know who saw it, and it wasn't Barry. It was another guy. Another guy stepped in. So, and somebody evidently was, because a couple of guys had got clipped at that time, as I'm recalling. But we go to so many places and so many different places at that time. that somebody could have got, you know, there's times when you're out watching the matches, somebody could have slipped in there, somebody from security. There's people around that we don't always know, you know. And it just, unless you catch the guy in the bag, pulling it out, and he's like, and you got him, then, yeah, you know. And I don't know if any of those guys, if that actually happened. You know, if Barry says he caught the guy, then I would believe Barry, you know. But I would truly hope that it's not some political crap. And, you know, and if he didn't do it, I would hope that it eventually would blow over and that it hadn't, like, been this thing that just follows him and eats at him all these years, you know.
Did you ever see anybody get caught stealing?
No.
No?
I never caught anybody stealing either. Never. But I've seen guys that did get caught, you know, and you know, they'll get their ass beat. But, then, you know, well, one guy didn't get his ass beat, but they fired him immediately. You know, they just went, he was gone. And it ruined PN News's career there.
Yeah,
because it was heavy hitter guys that he was having beef with, you know, and a couple of them had got clipped, you know. So I don't know, you know, I couldn't say, I didn't see it. You know, I'm one of those show me state guys. I'm born in Missouri. You got to show me, and I got to see it. You know, I'm not just going to go by somebody's hearsay. And like I said, like, you know, he was always a cool guy to me, but you never know. A thief can be a cool guy to your face and slip in your bag when you're out there working too.
Were you around any other crazy things like, you know, shady stuff? I know some guys, it's escaping me now. But somebody was apparently recording the boys when he left the locker room and stuff like that.
Who was doing this? Did you hear?
I'm going to forget the name right now, but it was, there's a story out there. I'll see if I can find the name while we're doing it. They were, you know, saying he would leave a recorder in his bag so he would hear what people were talking about him when he left the locker room. Anything like that?
I haven't heard that one. No, I'd like to know who did that. That's funny. That's pretty paranoid. Damn.
Yeah, that's
That's a little over the top with paranoia there. I hadn't heard that one. We have to figure out who the heck that was.
I mean, if I say the name, you're going to know him, but I just can't. I'm not going to be able to look up at it now. But
any other funny things? You asked me this a minute ago. The only funny thing, money, well, I got a funny story. And I, as a little boy, I went with my dad, and he was like in between. He had a couple weeks. He finished up in one territory, and he had like 2 or 3 weeks before he started up in the southern one. And they asked him to come to Tennessee, George Gulas. So Pop went up there and worked his shot. And I think it might have been Chattanooga, man. I was a little boy, man. And I went with him, and I'm sitting on the stage, right? So Pop's in the ring working, and this promoter comes up to me and hands me an envelope and goes, "Hey, kid, this is your dad's money. Put it in your pocket. Don't let anybody see it. Keep it. Put it away. You're responsible for it. This is your dad's money." "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir." I took that, put it in my pocket, right? So I go back. I follow Pop back to the locker room. So we walk through. I hand it to him. And since he gave me the money, he was gone, man. He hauled ass. So I had Pop the envelope. I said, "Hey, such and such told me to give this to you." And it was light. I remember him shaking his head going, "That old some bitch," you know. Said, "Well, he will never get another chance to flip me." And then we got in the car and we drove back home. He took his pay that he got clipped by George. And I didn't, you know, until I was later on an adult and realized, you know, what a dick move that was to take advantage of a little kid like that, you know. And to try to rip a guy off on his money.
Isn't it crazy? Because it messes him up in the future.
Yeah, well, it didn't. He did. He ripped everybody off like that. And guys still work for him. They didn't care. And they still act like they love him. "Oh, George Gulas." Okay. Or Nick Gulas. Excuse me. It wasn't George. George is the kid. It's Nick Gulas, the old timer. George is the kid.
Oh, yeah.
Nick's son. Yeah, I got that mixed up. but it was Nick Gulas, the old timer, the old redneck promoter. He was a big time promoter. He promoted for years, but boy, I imagine he clipped every one of those Tennessee guys at some point in time along the way, man. Yeah, he sure clipped Pop. I remember Pop just shook his head and he knew he was gone. And he was like, well, that old son of a bitch, but he won't never get me again. And off we went. And he never went back to work for him ever again either.
The guy I was thinking about was Stan Stasiak.
Stan Stasiak.
I mean, Sean Stasiak.
Sean Stasiak. I remember Sean, but I didn't know he did that. That's kind of that's paranoid crazy.
Yeah,
he was a little different. He was a little different.
But, yeah, that was the rumor.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's it. I knew he was a little different. I didn't know he was paranoid like that. So that's funny.
That way he would come back and see what people said when he left. If that's true, that's wild.
Oh, man. If everybody would have been smart to it, the ribs you could have pulled on it, man. Oh, my God. That would have been
They might have known and didn't care and just ribbed.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. It might have been ribbed anyway.
let's see what we got here. A couple more questions. Andrew Miller says, Nick, through your longevity in the business, did you ever come across any second or third generation talent that came in, with a huge chip on their shoulder or never truly figured it out in wrestling?
Hmm.
Or did you find
that they came in with a chip on their shoulder? Not the only one that I can think of that came in that had a chip on his shoulder was back in the day. It was, George Scott was a big booker in the Carolinas, and he came to book for Barnett for a period of time. And he wanted his son to take over my ref job. And that kid had a chip on his shoulder. He thought because his dad was a booker and his dad was going to put him in this position. And the boys hated him because he would listen and run in the studio. And if they did something, he said, I'm going to tell my dad. You know, it was like, dude, we're adults, man. You want to survive in this world? Are you kidding me? You know? And even George did a couple of ridiculous things to me, which really surprised me because he was supposed to have been friends with my dad and my uncle. We were really close friends, but he did not like me at all. I'm not sure why. I got an idea why, but I wouldn't say so because it would just be too rude. But he just didn't like, you know, because I'm not going to talk about somebody's past like that, but I know he did. He didn't like me at all. But the kid had a chip on his shoulder, man. And George didn't last long as a booker it was a good thing that he did that because at that point in time, he came in and my bookings dropped from just doing TV and one spot show. I mean, I wasn't even getting the major Georgia towns like Columbus and Augusta and Macon. I was going to Waycross and way down to Valdosta, you know, which are big towns now. But back then, they were small. You know, a little high school 300 miles away. It's not the same as going to working in the municipal auditorium in Columbus or in Macon or in Augusta, you know. Right. And so Mr. Barnett owned the territory, and he saw what was going on, so he created an office job for me where I made like $400 a week. Just running mail and running errands. He'd come out of the office, want me to take him home. I got to run around downtown Atlanta and eat lunch up in the Omni complex at different restaurants, man. And I was out there in the mix and I wasn't really doing nothing. I was just delivering mail and packages and getting paid $400 a week. Plus my two little shots, my TV pay, which TV pay back then wasn't a lot. You know, it wasn't like now studio. Those were still studio days back then. But then my one little house show, I was able to make ends meet that way. Anyway, George didn't last long as a booker. As soon as he was gone, the kid was gone at the same exact time. And my bookings I was back to working everywhere again.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Jack Spade wants to know, he said, according to the internet, and the internet's always right, of course.
Oh, yeah.
he said, your last match as a wrestler is listed. Well, let's just see before I say it. What do you think your last match as a wrestler was?
My last match as a wrestler was with against Sean O'Reilly in Mid-South in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1985 when I blew my knee out.
Well, then
that was my last. Now, I wrestled. I was a referee and had some matches. I wrestled right. Chris Jericho, and I wrestled in the WWE. I had two different matches. I wrestled Earl Hebner once on a pay-per-view,
yeah.
And I was in a six-man tag, right. Me and the Dudley Boys against The Rock, Chris Jericho, and Mike Chioda.
There you go. That's what's
and I whooped all of them, especially Chioda, man. You tell him I put it on him.
Now that's it.
Well, I laid it in.
Jack Spade said, according to your to the internet's always right. Your last match was that match. Chris Jericho, Mike Chioda, and The Rock versus Nick Patrick and the Dudley Boys. 10 minutes, 36 seconds. The Civic Center, Mobile, Alabama for WWF SmackDown. He said, what are your memories of that match?
Oh, it was fun, man. I remember Mike was stiff as hell with his kicks at the end. I guess he hadn't, you know, as a ref, you don't get to do that a lot, you know. And after that second one, I had my arm down there covering my ribs like, woo. I was glad I was getting that people's elbow next. I was hoping it wasn't as stiff as the kicks.
Yeah, did you get pinned?
But it was, yeah, I got pinned at the end. It was fun.
By Nick? I mean, by Mike?
Rock bottom first and put in position.
Yeah.
And then Chioda Rock made Chioda come and kick my arms in and do the people's elbow.
Oh, he did it.
Yeah. So yeah. It was fun, man. It was easy for me. Hell, all I had to do, the Dudleys did all the work. I got Heat sitting there working on the apron the whole time, and they built for them to finally get their hands on me at the end. Then Rock grabbed me and pulled me in over the top rope. I come in, boom, and they had me. And then it was it. That's what they built for, that moment of feeding me to the sharks, man. And then I whooped all of them, man. And me and the Dudleys walked out with our hands raised high.
I was looking back. I pulled up your matches, your wrestling matches. Looks like your last W now. Let's see when that was. Last win. November 28th, 1985.
Yeah.
Tag teamed with Butch Reed, and you beat Buzz Sawyer and Dick Slater in New Orleans.
I was lucky. I had a great partner.
You also had a singles match that night against Tommy Wright.
Oh, yeah. Tommy was one of my roommates, man. He was a super nice guy.
Tell me about Tommy Wright, Mr. Olympia.
Well, different Tommy Wright, I think.
Oh, is it a different one?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he might have been a Mr. Olympia at one time in some territory. Maybe
that was just his gimmick name.
Yeah.
Maybe he went by that for a while. It says
because we used to rib him and call him Boxhead for some reason. And he already had that nickname by the time I'd met him. So I just carried on.
You have a big old head?
Because he didn't have a huge body, but he had a big head. He had a great, he was pumped up. He was muscle wise. He just wasn't, he wasn't like 6'5". Neither am I.
All right. Our last question of the night, Aaron Sheen says, Nick, what is the biggest difference between today's wrestling and how it was back in the 80s and 90s, in your opinion? And has it changed for better or worse?
Hard to say for better or for worse because everything evolves. To me, it's a better produced product. If you look back at them old films and you look back, I mean, we talk about the old glory days, but if you watch back at some of them and look at it now, it's almost seems like it was in slow motion sometimes, except for, like the Rock and Roll Express and, Midnight Expresses. But it was different style, and we were on the cusp of things changing. And if you was going to change, you had to evolve with it, And it was a fun time, though. It was a good time, and, because storytelling is the same. You just have to take the framework and soup it up. You take old school, and to me, new school is old school souped up. To me, new school is not just kids doing spots. That's a different thing altogether. That's a spot thing. That's a certain spot on the card, you know, for that. But anyway,
there's a place for everything on a card nowadays.
Yeah, that's what I try to do with my show, man. Yeah. I want it to be a variety show. I don't want to sit and watch 2 hours of the same thing. I don't want to watch 2 hours of technical. I don't want to watch 2 hours of car crash. I don't want to watch 2 hours of people talking. I want to see action. I want to see variety. I want to see everything. You know, I want to see sexuality. I want to see something that makes me laugh. I want to see technical, but I want to see a car crash too. But I want to see a variety show. I want to see the whole thing, you know. And the key to being a good booker and a good writer is knowing how to place those things in an order where they tell a story and the show progresses and explodes and gets bigger and builds momentum all the way up to the end. So that's a whole art in its own.
All right. Well, look, we're coming off your big Halloween show for Deep South Wrestling. And I know you got a lot of things planned. So everybody should stay tuned because November's still going to keep rolling for the big events, right?
More events coming up on our next one. I'll have more information on some shows that we have coming up because we're still in the process of signing people on these shows. And once I can put names to towns, I will let you know where we're going to be and who's going to be there.
I was about to say, possibly coming out of Atlanta, right?
Oh, yeah. We're rocking in Atlanta right now, man. We are rocking in Atlanta right now. Right now, Das Barbecue, we're rolling there. And we've been in contact with a couple other people that's not in the Atlanta, inside the perimeter, but they're still in the Atlanta area. You know?
Oh, that's good.
So we're, you know, things are looking good for Deep South right now. I'm really proud of my crew. They're constantly putting new stuff together, working on the website and working on sponsors and working on the show and working. It takes a team, you know, and I'm blessed to have a good one.
Make sure you follow them on social media, Instagram, deep_south_wrestling. And you can see all of their matches coming up, just coming off Jacob Johnson and Austin Towers, Nikki Heat and Gemma Jules back at that Halloween show you just had. But all of those are on there on their Instagram. And, of course, you got a lot of stuff going up on the Deep South YouTube as well.
DeepSouth.com, baby. Check us out.
So a lot of things going on in Deep South, Nick, man. I appreciate it. Enjoy your Halloween, brother. And
yes, you sir. I'm gonna have fun, man.
You said you don't get many trick-or-treaters and don't dress up out where you're at, right?
No, but I'm gonna eat their candy anyway. I'm gonna buy like it, I'm gonna have a parade of kids. And I'm gonna eat every bit of it. Nick will single out his stuff, man. Nick's funny, man. He'll single his stuff out and he'll count it, make sure I ain't getting it.
What's his candy? What's he like?
Nick loves Kit Kats every Monday night. Kit Kat night, but he likes Reese's and he likes Paydays. And
through a bag of the pumpkin.
Is there really a bad candy bar?
No.
I like those score bars. It's got the English toffee on the inside.
Oh, the real crispy, real crunchy.
Yeah, They're a little crunchy, but damn, they taste good.
Well, have a happy Halloween, brother. When we check back
in, same to you, man.
You'll have some announcements where Deep South will be doing shows in November. So we can't wait to hear about that, brother.
Yeah, I'm going to have all kind of info for you guys on our next show. Y'all come up with some good questions for us.
Thanks, everybody. Yes, thank you for sending your question in. Those are fun questions here. And, hey, they can be anything. They can be about wrestling, new school or old school. They can be about any sports. They can be about food. They can be about whatever you want it to be. It's just a bunch of boys and girls sitting around having a good time chatting and learning about each other. So ask any question you want for Mr. Nick Patrick. We'll be back here in another 2 weeks. It's a Monday mailbag with Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. Thanks, everybody.